Hello and welcome to another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. Today's episode is being sponsored by The Perfect Gene. Today we're going to be speaking with former Israeli Special Forces soldier Doron Kadar. He is fresh out of the Gaza Strip. Now you might have seen him on Jack Carr's Danger Close podcast, but today we have him here on the Speak the Truth podcast. Brother, I got to tell you, it is good to have you on.
It's good to be back home. It's good to be away from the conflict. On the one hand, it's bittersweet, to be honest, because there's nothing more frustrating than taking part in a long war. And I think this is something that maybe most of the audience isn't aware of, but this is actually the longest war Israel has had since the founding of the State of Israel in 48. So we've had many, many wars, and this is actually the longest period of a war that we've had, mainly because it is a very complex situation. It's not like, facing armies face to face and all out combat like we've had in the past, if it's against Syria or Egypt or what have you, in proper conflict proper combat, right? Where you have, a unit against a unit, a force against a force, tanks, planes, what have you. It is a guerrilla warfare. It's dirty. You're fighting an enemy that you virtually can't see. It's very complex.
I don't even think it's fair to call it guerrilla warfare, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah.
You are combating terrorism and an insurgency. For sure. Guerrilla warfare, it's the tactics, right? Guerrilla warfare, I'm using small unit tactics to target infrastructure and specific military units to make a larger impact on the battlefield. What I'm not doing is murdering over 1,200 civilians and raping women and taking hostages. That's not guerrilla warfare. That's terrorism.
100%. 100%. What I mean about the guerrilla warfare part of it is the small unit attacks, the surprise attack, the hiding, something that, in guerrilla warfare, right, it is more of a dirty type of fighting. And usually it's because the enemy that you're up against is more. And so you have to, resort to so-called playing dirty or finding ways of finding the enemy weak spot and hitting those, right? So classic special forces type stuff. Definitely not what my enemy is doing. My enemy is not doing it because we're a bigger force against them. And it's like, so we're resorting to this because we don't have any other option. The option is actually not raping, murdering, and doing these horrible things that they did to us on October 7th. The option is living peacefully in your strip of land that has been given to you fully back in 2005. So I've been serving in the military since March of 2003. That's when I started my military service. I actually started late. So technically I'm a pre-2000 recruit. Was supposed to be recruited in like 99. So all that to say, I've been in warfare and specifically in Gaza actually since the early 2000s. And the sad reality is you're not facing a enemy that is defending itself or being attacked or what have you. When I'm saying the enemy for us or for them, like we're the enemy, I'm like, how exactly am I your enemy? Okay. Right. I gave you away land that was part of my land. When I was serving in the Givati, originally where I started my service was in Givati. It was the Gaza Strip unit. We protected the Jewish communities, the pockets of communities that were in the Gaza Strip. So it's not my first time there. I know what the Gaza Strip used to look like before the pullout. And I know what it used to be with our relations. When I say our relations, I mean Israeli relations with the Arabs living in Gaza. There was some type of normalcy, right? There was some type of normal relationship. Many of the Gazans would work in Jewish farms and or building and or what have you, right? So they had job opportunities. There was work, like people were working together, you know.
Right.
I think people kind of have this concept of, you know, we've been in this bloody fighting nonstop, and that's not the case. Human to human, there is normalcy. And that's what was in 2003 when I was there up in 2005. From 2005 to now, going into Gaza this time around, 20 years later, what I've witnessed is a complete shift where there is zero normalcy, zero. And I mean zero. I hate saying this. I wish I could tell you that there are innocents in Gaza. I wish I could tell you that I have seen a ton of innocent bystanders that have nothing to do with the terrorist, support or infrastructure. But literally, the terrorists have successfully brainwashed a whole generation in those 20 years, or 20 plus now, and have successfully taken over Gaza in such a way to where they have their thumb on every part of life. Every home we entered had terrorist banners and stuff. You know, here's some show and tell for you all, you know, for people might think that, you know, we're just making this stuff up, you know? I'm holding this upside down, actually. But if anybody can read that, you know, this is Hamas' symbol on top of the one at the very top. This is the Islamic, the Muslim Brotherhood.
Right.
Okay. So this is one of their classic banners that they have, flags, you know, with the inscription of how we're going to destroy Israel. We're going to take over. We're this and that. This is our this is what you find in a home. Christmas mugs, right? With, you know, with Santa Claus or whatever, you know, and Merry Christmas, you know, from our family. Well, here's happy whatever, you know, from
Hamas,
the terrorists,
filled with rockets.
Yeah. And this is what they idolize. This is what, you know,
and you pulled that mug out of a house in Gaza.
Yeah. There was a whole batch of them.
So one of the things that I have been trying to impart on people when you're talking about terrorism in particular, that you have the, you know, when you break down a terrorist network or an insurgency, you have guerrilla fighters and then you have the underground and auxiliary, the people that support them. And generally speaking, your underground and auxiliary forces are vastly larger than your actual guerrilla fighters because they're the support network. All of those weapons that are being moved around the Gaza Strip, all of those hostages that are being funneled around, all of the food and material support that goes into them, that's all part of the terrorist network. And just as a fuel truck driver driving through the Gaza Strip and that's a member of the IDF is going towards the front line to refuel a tank, for example, those underground and auxiliary networks within Hamas are just as much valid military targets as are the guerrilla fighters themselves.
Yep.
And
exactly.
It is something that the world as a whole is struggling to grasp as a concept when it comes to warfare, specifically combating terrorism and counterinsurgencies. And the numbers that we're hearing come out of the Gaza Strip are one, insane. They're coming out from the Palestinian Health Authority that is essentially controlled by Hamas. And yet the world is stating these as facts all the way up to including the White House, the UN, just everybody on the world stage is quoting these numbers from them. And when I researched into it, it looked like those numbers are coming out of, you know, what the PHA is saying is no, those are the numbers that the doctors in the hospitals are reporting. But the doctors in the hospital have also been helping move hostages around and treating them and lying to the press. So really, we have no idea what the actual casualty number is when it comes to terrorism, right? When it comes to the Hamas fighters inside of Gaza. I don't think there's any way, even if the IDF did a complete in-depth study and the international community came in, there's just no way of knowing who was a terrorist versus who was civilian casualties or collateral damage.
Yeah, you're right. It's very, 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 and I mean very difficult to quantify, to try to nail down, because Okay, put it this way, and I think you pointed out, you put it out very in a very professional, good. You explained it perfectly, essentially, right? You have what the world hears about is you hear the label Hamas. Well, you have Hamas, you have Islamic Brotherhood, you have the Al-Aqsa Brigade, you have many different terrorist entities, and each one, I'll put it like this, I'll try to even simplify it a little bit more. Each one of these, you need to think of them as mafia gangs, okay?
Sure.
Like mafia family. And imagine that, like in any mafia-controlled area, those mafia gangs are fighting for control for those resources that has to come through them because it means more money for their group, right? And that's why you have mafia wars. There's wars over the shipping docks. There's wars over the transport of Walmart trucks or what have you, right? Like, you know, we control this and we control this. And depending on what areas of control you have, it's either more money for your terrorist organization or less. So Hamas is at the very top of the food chain. So you're going to hear of them more, but essentially you have all these other ones and they're all fighting for power. They're all very viciously. I mean, these guys don't mess around. They are not about human rights. They're not about Palestinian rights. They're literally all they are about is power and control. And if anybody's following my social media, I do my best, like you're pointing out to earlier, to get that information out to people so that you're not ignorant and just be like, well, I don't know what he's talking about, you know, what Israel's talking about, what they're saying, humanitarian aid or whatever. Just look at the last post that I put on. You'll see that I shared the footage that has been showing the trucks of humanitarian aid being trucked into Gaza that have been taken over by Hamas militants and literally speeding away through a crowd of people to get to where they can fully control it and distribute it to whoever is close to the plate, as we call it, right? And so that's essentially who's controlling these terrorist entities, and that's how it works. And then, like you said, then you have all of those the support structure, right, which are mostly civilian, who support the movements of Hamas, the you know, in different areas, and people get appointed as, for example, the principal of a school. It's something as basic as that, right? The principal of a school, because they're going to be pumping more Hamas propaganda at that school by getting appointed. And sure, of course, their funding and so on is going to come from that guy. The same with the hospitals are fully controlled by these terrorist entities. And you mentioned United Nations, okay? I'm sorry, but again, I was there, and there are a lot of people that they're criticizing my military, the operations that we took part in. I spent 4.5 months in Gaza. So everything I'm saying is what I did and what I saw. And if you have a different opinion, different spin on it, and you weren't there, then I'm sorry, but I think I have one up on you. Yeah. It's as simple as that. Just like I will never criticize you or any other U.S. military soldier who had to operate in Afghanistan, Iraq, because I was never there. But I have many friends in that community, and we discuss our, you know, operations and what have you. And I know that we're on the same brain length level, right, of ethics and how we fight. And to be honest, we're much softer than the U.S. Special Forces community, even in how we view our enemy, because many of our Special Forces guys, they're just different than like what you guys have, right? Like, we don't have this selection process like you do in the States, and it's built a little bit differently. So the irony is you're going to have people who are more soft in their political outlook in Special Forces, and they're very much for, like, their family is very much involved in humanitarian rights and whatever for the Palestinians. They're the ones protesting on the streets in Tel Aviv just months before this attack to stop the military aggression of the state of Israel against Gaza and whatever. Like, these are the kind of people who ended up back in Gaza after October 7th. And I just found it, you know, somewhat ironic is I would have conversations with them and they say, you know, I just can't believe, like, I used to believe like this, and now, like, this is crushing my worldview. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, yeah, you know, because when you realize that everything that you have been trying to defend and stand up for, and it's like, well, if you just give them opportunity, if we just give them this, and if it's just that, in other words, we're very much more humanistic in our worldview, I would say. And I just find it ironic that out of all the war fighters in the world, we're the ones, you know, that are accused of being aggressive. And it's just like, you guys have no clue. Like,
right. So let's, I mean,
in my opinion, we're very soft. You know?
Yeah, same. I think you guys have done a fantastic job, you know, and I think back to, look, I was fighting ISIS under President Trump and, mm-hmm. or former President Trump. I was fighting ISIS under former President Trump, and our marching orders were very clear.
Yeah.
Try not to kill kids. Don't specifically target children and kill ISIS. That's it. You know, if I was to summarize it, don't kill kids, kill ISIS. And unfortunately, ISIS has children that are fighting for them. And I'm assuming, just based off of everything I've seen, again, I haven't been in the Gaza Strip, but just off of mm-hmm. everything I've seen, I'm assuming as well that Hamas also has child fighters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. And so, and I'll try to make some film references. Maybe this will help your audience better understand our position. So if anybody's ever watched American Sniper, right? And you know that outrage that you get when you see the young kid being tortured by the butcher of Ramadi or whatever the dude's name is, right? His nickname. And he's standing there with a drill and he's drilling this little kid. You know, I don't think there's anybody with a moral fiber in their body that sees that and goes, nah, that's okay. Right? Everything in you is saying, I hope that those special forces SEALs kick that guy's ass and annihilate him. That's right. Everything in you is saying, like, I hope justice is going to be executed to that bastard. That's what's going through your mind if you're a normal human being. What I don't understand is when you saw footage of these terrorists, these monsters, and I don't call them animals because that's actually an insult to the animal kingdom. Animals don't act the way these men had acted towards our people. It was demonic. It was just monstrous what they did. And I can't understand how can you view what came out when it came out originally on social media. And most of it's been taken down, not because we're trying to hide evidence, but because we respect the victim.
Correct.
Of that horror that their families are still alive and have to view that crap that's online. So we're doing a very good job at actually taking everything off the web on purpose. And there's a ton of stuff that I've never shared and I never will share because I respect the victims. And it's something that people just don't understand. Well, you know, you're used to seeing war footage and you see everything that the terrorists are leaking through Al Jazeera, whatever. And ironically, a lot of that is either an earthquake in Turkey footage or different other unrelated to the conflict footage, because it's like which I find very, very, like, seriously, you have to reenact a victim from a bombing of the Israeli Air Force bombing. Like, if it's really happening right now, why don't you show the footage of it happening right now? Why are you showing from other things and mixing it together into a news report and saying this is happening in Gaza? It's like that the footage is even from there, right? So in case, this is hopefully some food for thought for people to think about. This is what I had to face is something way worse than what you would see in a film, in a Hollywood film, way worse than most special forces guys have had to face in their lifetime in operating to fight ISIS and all these terrorist scumbags in the global war against terrorism. And this happened, this didn't happen to some Iraqi kid. Okay, that is unrelated to me. These horrors, they happen to somebody I know. Right. They happen to a family member. This is like very, very, very personal. this isn't something that I'm doing to prevent it from happening to maybe to another American, perhaps whatever. Like, no, this is happening right now. And it's happening to Americans right now, right here in front of me. These are family members. This is on my neighborhood. The terrorists are running around in my neighborhood. They're killing the neighbor right now. They're gunning him and raping and beheading and burning their child alive in an oven right now. Put yourself in those shoes and you tell me, what would you do different than me?
Well,
I am open to criticism of good ideas, right? Please tell me. Tell me what you would have done different than what we did.
Sure. And it's solved the problem, right? And this is something that I think the entire world, especially Americans, have a problem understanding is that, look, when we were dealing with Iraq, when we were dealing with Afghanistan, we have an ocean that's separating us. Israel doesn't have an ocean of separation at all. Yeah. And whatever mistakes you make, you will feel the next day, if not the same day. So it's not an failure is not an option. If you pull out of the Gaza Strip today and Hamas ends up running over top of it again, all they're going to do is refit and reorganize and come right back after Israel. And it's very clearly lined out in their charter that they believe Palestine, which is defined within their charter by very specific borders, encompasses all of Israel, and that they claim it to be an Arab Islamic land, and that they're allowed to take that Arab Islamic land by any means necessary.
Here, this is very common, by the way. You'll find this as well. They like to, it's a nice little scarf deal. So what you just pointed out, okay, talk about charters. You see that red there?
Mm-hmm.
That is the map of Israel, all of Israel. Okay, if it's not clear to y'all back home, wherever you're at viewing this right now, the threat to the state of Israel from these terrorist groups is literally the whole of the land of Israel. When they say from the river to the sea, they mean from the Jordan River, which borders the country of Jordan and Syria in the north. So from that Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, which means zero place for Jews to exist. And that's another question I'd like to ask again, the people who make that claim that, free Palestine from the river to the sea. Okay, let's free Palestine. What do you mean by that? Free it from what? And if you mean free Palestine from Jewish statehood, okay, what do you suggest to have instead of a Jewish state? And then, of course, to follow through all your great ideas, bottom line question for me to you is, where do you suggest we're nearly 8 million Jews that live here now, where do you suggest the 8 million Jews to go? If not here, then where?
Well,
right?
Well,
what is your
what
great
they
solution,
would say is that you can continue to live there, and if you refuse to convert, you better just pay the jizya. And if you don't, we all know what's going to happen.
And that's the thing. The people aren't even like you talk about the jizya, right? They don't even know what that is. They don't even know what that is, and they've never lived under that. Here, you know what? Here, let me give you some insight, okay? I'm not just for Jewish rights, okay? Anybody's ever heard me publicly speak, I am very, very strong against conservatives who make some blatant statements like Israel should just bomb them all. Israel should just this and that. And I understand their enthusiasm. I understand their outrage, because anybody, like I said, who has a little bit of moral fiber in their body will know that what is happening to the Jewish people, to the state of Israel, is morally very wrong, and that Israel has to put a heavy hand towards the wrongdoers. But I'm of the opinion of, yeah, but you have to do it right. I'm not going to punish a bunch of people who had nothing to do with these terrorist attacks. I want to punish the terrorists, not the civilians. And I want to make sure that those civilians who are represented, what the world calls Palestinians, I want the Palestinians to have food, water, shelter, jobs, opportunity, everything that an Israeli citizen has, I want that for them as well. I don't expect them to just disappear from the planet and just evaporate into nothingness. So I am more than willing to fight for their right for everything, schools, institutions, you name it.
Sure.
But that's not what they're asking. It's not what they're promoting. What they have, unfortunately, is a blood thirst. And this is I can recommend some articles that people should read. But I know that Douglas Murray did a really good piece on this, for example, where he talks about the moral equivalency and how, you know, trying to compare the deaths of Palestinians to the deaths of Israelis. So we had 1,400 people killed. Well, the Palestinians had 30,000, right? And we now know also where that information is coming from. It's like there's no, you want more equivalency? Well, here's more equivalency. How about I go rape and murder their people and I try to commit genocide against their people? That's morally a moral equivalent. You know, that's not what we're doing. We do not operate on the same scale. Do not compare their morale to our morals, okay? Their morals to our morals. We're completely on a different scale of morals. We value human life. In Judaism, there's a saying that if you were to save a life, you were to save the world. To kill a life, it's as if you were to murder the whole world. So we see every human being as the representation of the whole of humanity. And therefore, every human being is sacred and holy before God.
So you mentioned genocide. And I think that's something that's very important for us to actually talk about. You know, in the wars in Iraq, in the war in Iraq, for example, the U.S. estimate was we killed right around 40,000 enemy combatants inside of Iraq. Now, that country's huge. And that was from a time span of 10 years that number comes from 2003 to 2013. However, inside Gaza, there is an estimated 30 to 40,000 roughly enemy combatants, just guerrilla fighters, 30 to 40,000. And that's in a city the size comparable to Las Vegas square footage. And I think it's hard for people to wrap their minds around that this is not like, you know, U.S. urban combat that we faced inside of Iraq. It's totally different. And our collateral damage rate, our CIVCAS rate, is way higher than what Israel's is. And inside a much more condensed space with a hell of a lot more enemy combatants inside that condensed space. You know, it rivals, you know, U.S. battles in Iraq such as Fallujah. What kind of like criteria, like how much scrutiny is the IDF under when you guys are inside there developing your target packages or just in day-to-day fighting? Because people on the outside, they look at those numbers and they look at what's taking place and they're like, oh my God, that's genocide. Or, yeah, you know, a new phrase that I heard come out the other day when, you know, the UN was like, nah, this isn't exact, or I'm sorry, the ICJ was like, nah, not exactly genocide. Then they came out with domicide while Israel's taking out all these buildings. So, and I try to explain to people, look, there's hit and run tactics, you know, there's guerrilla fighting, there's all sorts of stuff that's taking place. And those are all likely because I don't have the information on the ground that you guys had. I wasn't in the position of the ground force commanders. I wasn't, you know, didn't have access to all the intelligence. And I didn't have the information as to what the soldiers were going through on the ground in any of these aerial strikes. That it's very possible that every single one of those strikes is against a valid military target. And yet people have a misconception that Israel is just out carpet bombing the area. What would you say to those people? Listen, if you guys are like me, you hate going to the store and physically going shopping for anything, in particular clothes. It sucks. Let's be honest. Dealing with the crowds, dealing with the people, dealing with cash, like the entire experience to me just sucks. I hate it. And then I can never find what I want and nothing ever fits. Well, today's video sponsor, The Perfect Jean, has came up with a solution to all of our denim difficulties. They use some like weird proprietary special blend of fabric that has the perfect amount of stretch. And to be honest, they look great. They make six entirely different fits, from skinny like myself or to thick, kind of like Rob. And they have waist sizes from like 26 all the way up to 50 and lengths from 26 to 38. So it doesn't matter If you're a beanpole like I am, or if you're a chunkster like Rob, they got you covered. And for a limited time right now, our listeners are getting 15% off their first order, plus free shipping at theperfectgene.nyc, or just Google The Perfect Gene and use code ROB15 and get 15% off. Look, these things are like super easy to order. I am not a huge fashion freaking icon, as you all know. And these things showed up. They fit great. My wife loves them. And to be honest, like that stretch, like here, look at this. I don't know how else to tell you guys this, man, but like they figured out these jeans fit great. They showed up at the right size that I ordered. And they're perfect. Quite literally the perfect jean. It is finally time to stop crushing your balls in uncomfortable jeans by going to theperfectgene.nyc. Our listeners get 15% off your first order plus free shipping, free returns, and free exchanges when you use code ROB15 at checkout. That's 15% off for new customers at theperfectgene.nyc with promo code ROB15. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. F your khakis and get the perfect jean. Trust me, guys, it is worth it.
Well, like I explained to you earlier, the moral mindset of many of our war fighters, and especially the Air Force, they are known to being the most humanistic and somewhat pansy of the IDF. Okay. And I know I might be offending some people here, but I'm just saying things as I see them. Okay. It's known that the Air Force people, or the Air Force community, the pilots, okay, the pilots have gone on strikes many times before, claiming we're not going to fly these planes unless our government changes, because we do not support a far right government. So this was just a few months before the attack on October 7th. Was pilots for the, and that's actually the first time in that we know of, literally were refusing a command, refusing an order. They said, we are not going to show up for either our reserve duty, which many of the pilots, unlike myself, you know, I have to go in every so many months for training. These guys have to show up, I believe it's once a week, sure. If not, I forget exactly, but it's pretty intense. Like they have to show up quite a lot. And so these guys are saying, we're not showing up for the those qualifications. And some were even saying, we're grounding the planes to where we're not going to carry any other operations until this government changes. Okay. So these were protests that were happening just before the war. So what I'm trying to point out is, you need to understand is that the pilot community, if you like, are very much, they're very soft. Okay. They're very soft. They do not want any, human casualties on their conscience.
Sure.
And in their minds, a government that has been voted in by the people, right? Okay. Because we have a democracy. So it's not like our government is some genocidal, dictatorship government. Okay. There's elections and so on. But when the elections don't fall in the favor of their political views, they literally have pushed the buck, which has not happened before, to literally refuse following military orders. And that's a big deal. And that's something that I personally took very strong opposition towards, like me opposing that stance. Unless I'm in an unlawful order, and this is the foundation in the military, when it comes to following orders, this is one of the benchmarks of you follow every command, so to speak. It's called an unlawful order. So in other words, it's framed that you obey the orders that are given to you, you fulfill the mission, ... unless the command that is given to you is an unlawful order. So an unlawful order would be to murder people.
Right.
An unlawful order would be genocide. And I guarantee you that with moral compass that our military has, and that, again, I was there on the ground, and I was in the very forefront of the war that was happening in Gaza, starting in the north, and we worked our way down. And the last place that I stepped my foot in, as far as fighting Hamas, was in Khan Yunis. After Khan Yunis, we got pulled out, and now the fighting is continuing. So I can testify from day one of the war till 4.5 months into the war, I have not seen one act of genocide at all. And in fact, most of the fighting is happening within a 200 meter radius from where I was at. So I'm not saying that, like, you know, oh, I'm in Khan Yunis and I'm sitting in a house and watching TV and in a control room. I'm in the battlefield. I'm in the battle space. Okay. Mm-hmm. My hearing got messed up, and you know, all the things that come with that. I mean, having explosions, airstrikes, literally within meters of you,
sure.
50 meters of you. That's the battle space. So number one, we're not going to threaten the lives of our soldiers. But the reason why those strikes are happening is because I'm seeing an enemy from my position. I cannot risk my soldiers going to get killed if they were to go approach that building, because we see that it's either booby trap mm-hmm. or they're hunkered down in such a way. So if I'm able to, and by the way, this is also important for people to understand, it is a rare exception that I'll even get air capabilities to strike that target. So it has to be, in other words, a very rare condition to where I can request an airstrike.
So that's interesting. So you guys,
so in other words, you know what I mean? I don't get a free for all.
You guys were requesting airstrikes and routinely were denied on specific airstrikes.
Because it's because the military can only resource so many airstrikes, right? In other words, it has to be a target that there's no other option but us do an airstrike, right? Then there is the reality of there's collateral damage here. And I don't like the word collateral that's used in the media, because to me that equals human beings. So let's call it what it is. So human casualties is unacceptable for us. And it's sure as hell unacceptable for the pilot. I can tell you, based on what I just told you, right? The pilots they are the last ones to pull the trigger on a target if there's collateral or human casualties that would incur in that strike. And in fact, and we put this online, okay? It's just people ignore the information that we do put out there, where we've shown footage of airstrike after airstrike after airstrike of the pilots calling off the strike, because you have the final say in the cockpit on pull the trigger, don't pull the trigger.
Sure.
And every time that they felt any threat whatsoever towards casualties on the enemy side, I'm not talking about casualties to us, not you know, us being the collateral, the soldiers.
Talking civilian casualties.
Civilian casualties, Gazans, they're calling it off all the time, okay? Because we will not strike if there's going to be a civilian that is in the area. So that's number one. Number two, just so you realize too, is that the terrorists are dressed in civilian clothing.
Correct.
So for the warfighter, it is extremely difficult to operate in a battle space where all the terrorists, right, that if you do get to engage with, and that's another thing that's important for people to understand, I spent 4.5 months in Gaza and I didn't see one terrorist face to face.
And that's something that I try to explain to people as well. That is quite literally, when we talk about insurgency, how they operate. You guys have these weapons caches that you're finding all over the Gaza Strip. They'll go in, they will shoot at you from a position, and because they're in civilian attire, they then are able to leave that position and go to another one and then pick up more weapons and then continue to attack and then pick up and move. Yep. And it just rinse, cycle, repeat. And that civilian attire, that civilian uniform they wear, is body armor for them.
Correct. And or women and children as human shields.
Right. And I'll...
Yeah. So any case, so that's, I think, something important for people to understand. Imagine I'm in the very forefront of this battle. People are dying around me left and right. We had one day, we were detached with the paratroopers. So anybody following the information or the news reportings, and you saw over 20 soldiers killed in one day, that happened within meters from me, right? Like I said, and there's nothing more frustrating than knowing that the enemy is literally under my feet, okay? And then he picks when to attack us based on the intel they're gathering on you and all this stuff. And they hit you, and when they hit you hard, and you can't even fight back. You can't find the suckers, right? And like people talk about, like I, you know, we were talking about a genocide. First of all, it's not a genocide. And to me, just the other day, I met with African leaders who came to Israel to visit the Gaza Strip and the Jewish communities that were attacked and did have a genocidal attack attempted against Israel. I told them, I said, you know, what I find is insulting is that people are claiming what the IDF is doing is a genocide, and that actually takes away from what that term really means.
Correct.
And I said, if there's any continent on the planet that understands what true genocide is, it's the continent of Africa. And that you gentlemen here in this room and some women leaders from their respective countries, I said, you should be the ones, in my opinion, to speak up to the world and say, this is an insult to us in what we experienced. Those of us who experienced the Rwandan genocide, right? Those who went through what happened in Darfur, et cetera, et cetera. There are plenty of examples of true, real genocide, the attempt to, which people, I guess, don't understand what it means. It's the erasing of another ethnic group simply because of their ethnicity. IDF is not fighting in Gaza because they are Gazans or because they're Palestinians. We are fighting in Gaza because I have Jewish hostages, over 130 hostages right now, presently, who are held in Gaza. And I'm in there to go get my hostages back, to get my people back. That's number one. Number two, it's to hit the terrorists who are the ones who perpetrated the attack and to annihilate them so that they no longer pose a threat to my civilians. Has nothing to do with ethnicity, has nothing to do with these false usage of the terms of genocide. And as I sent you a message also the other day, I was even hurt more deeply, actually, because to me, this is something, you know, I don't care what the UN says. You know, we were there and we saw how the UN used their infrastructure to actually support terrorism. So to me, the UN equals Hamas equals terrorism equals ISIS. And if that's something for people that's hard for them to hear, well, you just come and I'll show you some pictures and I'll show you hard fact evidence of how the United Nations had employees that were supporting Hamas directly. Right. And we know this for a fact. But in any case, but to have a former Special Forces, to me, hero. Okay, these are people who are heroes. They went and they laid their life down for the United States. They fought the terrorists, like you said, with an ocean separating. But you went, you did your job to protect your nation, and you know, to be in Special Forces is not easy. And so for me, any person who was willing to pay that price and went through all the qualifications and went through the hell of war and lived to tell the story, to me, I take my hat off to you. Okay. We have something that we share, and to have somebody who has been on that battlefield and knows what it's like, and to use that experience, but then tie it into the conflict in Gaza when you haven't been there and you don't know what we're going through, which is much different than what you had to face right in Afghanistan, Iraq, that's insulting. And so the gentleman I'm talking about, and I don't know if there's more from the community, but to have people from the warrior brotherhood, okay, that community, okay, we all share one thing, and that is we all are willing to lay down our lives for our family, for our home, for our country, and to pay the ultimate price if we have to. That is something that we understand and we can relate to. I cannot relate to somebody who's been there and we share that bond, so to speak, and then you're then accusing me of being a scumbag.
Yeah. No, and you know I obviously I don't speak for the entire, you know, United States Army Special Forces and the Green Berets, just like that gentleman does it. You know, it's mind-numbing to me that he can take that stance without have actually been in there, particularly after he's been to war and knows everything that goes into even developing a single strike package or developing a target, the amount of intelligence that goes into it, not to mention on the ground information that you have to gather. It's just an unfair and unjust statement that gentleman made. And I'll link it. I'll provide a link for it down in the description so that people can watch it. Yeah. Now, my question for you, moving forward here, like you said, there's over 100 hostages still being held, presumably within Gaza. Yeah. And I think what ended up happening with a lot of them was when the IDF opened up the evacuation corridor out of the north, I feel like a lot of those hostages either got moved through tunnel networks or were smuggled down further south and continued to get pushed further south. And here in America, we had Super Bowl Sunday, and we watched the IDF conduct a raid down in Rafah where they recovered two hostages successfully. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. The IDF right now is supposed to be, Israel right now is supposed to be in peace talks with Hamas. And Hamas's statements on their conditions for, you know, a ceasefire is going to be the complete and total withdrawal of the IDF from the Gaza Strip, which is unfathomable to me. And it's unfathomable, I think, to most Israelis at this point. So those hostages are being held, in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinions, down in Rafah or still in tunnel networks down below there. And I think the IDF is going to go into Rafah during Ramadan. Yeah. And I think Netanyahu himself said that if our hostages are not returned by the beginning of Ramadan, we are going into Rafah. And then that opens up Hezbollah, who was given the green light by Iran, to then attack Israel. And so Israel is now facing two fronts because of Hezbollah in the north and all the hostages being held down in Rafah. So the IDF's hand is being forced in this. Israel's hand is being forced. And I know for a fact IDF is going to go in there with a moral compass when they do go in there, but my gigantic fear is what's going to happen on the world stage. So I guess, in my opinion, it's bound to happen. I'm not going to ask you to comment on it, but let's say, for example, if the IDF was to go into Rafah, I'm not asking you to give up intelligence or anything of that nature. Do you believe the IDF is going in there with a very high moral equivalence of understanding we're getting our hostages back, we're here to eliminate terrorism, and that is our end state, that is our goal? Would you agree with that statement going into Rafah? Like, it's not about genocide. It's no, you have our people that are being held hostage and we want our dang hostages back.
That is, I mean, that is literally the bottom line. It is literally the bottom line. And why is Rafah different than Khan Yunis, Sajia, in the city of Gaza, where we have been operating and successfully maneuvering the civilians into out of the harm's way? And for those who got held back, that again falls squarely on Hamas. They have purposely with held hostage their own people, let alone our hostages. They have held hostage their own people, which to me is a way worse crime. It's like, I get it that you're holding my people hostage, but to hold your own people hostage so that they become collateral when I have to operate in a battle space where you're hiding in civilian area is something I can't relate to. And I have zero respect for any warfighter who is that big of a scumbag that you're going to bring that horror on your own people. I guarantee you no warfighter, myself included, ever wants to fight and shoot and kill and or bomb or what have you, any innocent civilian of any kind. When it comes to the enemy, I want to annihilate him. I want to put him more than 6 feet under the earth and to eradicate the earth from that pure evil that is only going to continue to steal, kill, and destroy as many humans as they humanly can if they're allowed to do so. So, like some people like to hypothesize, if you had the opportunity, would you assassinate Hitler, knowing what evils would have come of him? I think there's not one person that would, you know, maybe they might not feel, they feel queasy with the idea of killing, period. But let's just say, hypothetically,
if you could remove Hitler from the earth, would you?
Yeah. If it was hypothetically in your power to push a little button, okay, you don't have to pull a trigger, just push a little button and magically this guy disappears. Would you do it? And I think almost any person would say absolutely yes. And that is the way they should understand and view Hamas, is that if you had a magic button to eliminate these guys, that you should push that button. And when people want to talk about freeing the Palestinians, I am with you. I will march with you. Let's free the Palestinians. Free them from Hamas control. Free them from this demonic entity that is destroying lives, not just of Israelis, but of their own people more than anything, really. I mean, the biggest hit and casualties and collateral is coming on the Palestinians because of Hamas, not because of the IDF. And that's very important for people to understand. And then the other thing is, too, we're not just fighting in Gaza and up in the north. By the way, we're actively now, and have been from the first day of the war, actively also fighting in the north. We've just been doing it more silently. We've been trying to, we're trying to minimize the military presence and make mm-hmm. It's hard to explain, but basically we're not sending all our troops up there yet, but there is an ongoing threat in the north right now. Where I grew up in the very tip of the north of Israel on the border to Lebanon, and the people that I grew up with, they're basically my family. They have been living in another part of Israel where they've been evacuated from the north since the first day of the war till now, still happening, right. Ongoing. And if you look at your phones and use the app, the Red Alert, you'll see that just as we've been having this conversation, literally they've been firing rockets up in the north.
Sure.
Now
it's happening right now. Basis.
On top of that, we have in Judea and Samaria, okay, the West Bank, you have an ongoing threat from insurrections coming up as a result from the terrorist attack on October 7th. And the main goal of the October 7th attack was actually to get to Jerusalem. So while I was called up on the first day and I was traveling to base to get my gear and what have you, the deep concern for my family that they might be targeted wasn't without any grounds. Sure. The terrorists were planning to travel right through where my community is, and they could have just as easily stopped here as well on their way to the end goal, which was to get to Jerusalem and essentially to get to the Temple Mount. So the trigger is the Temple Mount to cause a insurrection of all the Muslim Arabs living in Judea, Samaria, or the West Bank, mm-hmm. and in East Jerusalem to rise up and to fight the Jewish state. That was their end goal. Had they have reached Jerusalem, which we stopped them from doing so, but had they reached Jerusalem, it would have been catastrophic. What is being planned right now, and this is on October 10th, okay, the first night of Ramadan, so Monday. So October 10th, I think, in the evening.
March 10th.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, March. Did I say October?
Yeah, it's fine.
Dyslexia. So March 11th, the day of March 11th, right? But it's on nightfall, is the first night of Ramadan. So what I will tell you is, folks, keep your eye on Monday, okay? Monday next week, the first day of Ramadan, and you watch and see how the terrorists are going to use the Temple Mount as the trigger point to cause Muslims, and combining it with Ramadan, to want to insurrect against Israel and basically cause a whole new wave of horror and evil. And that's why my gear is packed and ready, because let me tell you, I'm very concerned about what we're facing here in the next few days. Very concerned.
I'm with you. I think the worst is yet to come, to be honest with you. Like, I really feel that in my soul, like understanding their mentality as best as a sane human being can.
Yeah.
It's not going to be good. What's about to be unfolding.
No, but we're ready to stop them. We're ready to stand up against them. And that's the privilege that Jews have today. And unlike War II, unlike the Holocaust, where Jews were led to the slaughter like lambs, just led to the slaughter. We just quietly were allowed to be murdered and have the worst things happen to us. Thank God there are defenders like myself who have dedicated their lives to training, to hardening ourselves, to honing our skills so that we can be the best defenders we can to defend our people from that future threat, which unfortunately is happening right now. And what is even worse off, people say, well, if I was, living through the Holocaust, I would have been silent. Well, I'm going to stop you right there and tell you most likely you would have been silent, because guess what? You have something as simple as making a little social post on your Instagram, Facebook, mm-hmm. what have you, in support of free the hostages. I'm not saying support Israel. I'm not saying wave an Israeli flag, but you don't support the fact that hostages should be released from their over 150 days of captivity. Sure. And I think now it's 157, 58 days in captivity. Put yourself in the hostage's shoes. Would you like to be a hostage who's being raped repeatedly daily?
Oh, absolutely not.
Malnutritioned, et cetera. Just like what happened in the Holocaust, guys. And literally, this is one of the worst attacks on Jews throughout history since the Holocaust. And the world is not just that they're being silent, you're condemning us. You're condemning right. the victim. Do you know what that feels like? Do you have any clue? Like, let it try to go through your brain for a moment and try to think for a moment. Put yourself in my shoes. Quit thinking about the Palestinians, how they're suffering and how their world is so bad and horrible. They brought it on themselves. Let's start with that.
Fact.
But let's put them aside for a sec. You have if you're so quick for human rights, why don't my rights not matter? Why do right. Jewish rights not matter?
Right. No, I'm with you.
How come it's not both sides here?
Okay. So it's, you get what I'm saying? It's absolutely insane for people to condemn Israel. And I mean, I got a little bit, like a couple instances throughout my military career when I got home from Iraq or Afghanistan and I was back in the United States where I met some anti-war folks, but nothing on the scale that you all face. But things that I always kept in my mind, you know, when I was in Afghanistan, I have a moment to where I remember being there and seeing something in particular. I'm going to hold off on it, but it was like, aha, this is why I'm here. This is why I'm here. When you were inside Gaza, did you have that aha moment when you were inside of there, aside from the day-to-day stuff, to where it was a very blatant in your face, this is why I'm here?
For sure. For sure. One of the most... I would say it was one of the coolest things that has ever happened during wartime. I don't know if people know, but we helped assist the humanitarian work that Victor Marx and All Things Possible were doing here in Israel. And he sent me a personal video. I'm not going to say what it was, but essentially he sent me a video because he had been at my home. And he had just basically was showing me my home, right, in the video and saying, I want to encourage you essentially with here's what you're fighting for, right? And just literally just showed me footage of my home, right? With the sounds of the nature here and all that. And he's like, I just want to encourage you, you know, like the, you know, and I was like, that's exactly it. When he sent that message, it was such an encouragement and a boost of like, wow, somebody gets it. Somebody gets it. Like, yes, that is exactly why I am here, why my brothers are here. Mm-hmm. We are here because of our families. We're here because, like I said, for the first time in many years, Jewish people have a defense force. We haven't had this luxury in centuries. And people won't understand this, especially people in the Instagram, social media, TikTok, quick information generation we're in today. You just see something that's cool now and it's gone in 10 seconds and you forgot about it. We have a long span of history of those who have tried to kill us, who have killed us, who have done horrible atrocities to us. But this is the first time in millennia that we have been able to literally defend ourselves. And if people have a hard time with that and it bothers them, well, tough. You know, we're here to literally fight for our people. We're here to fight for our families. And that is literally what it's all about.
And I think that's something that, like, again, it's hard for Americans or even a lot of people out in the West to understand that it is quite literally on your doorstep. And if you don't solve the problem and you leave tomorrow, it's going to be there. It's going to persist and more Israelis are going to die. And when people look at this and they go, okay, well, let's assume every number, let's just thought experiment, assume every number that the PHA has put out, that 30,000 civilians have been killed, 70% being women and children.
Yeah.
There is no way of knowing, neither of us are God. There is no way of knowing if Hamas was allowed to exist, how many Israelis would be killed over time, especially without the Iron Dome, especially looking at October 7th, you know, and just wrapping everything up.
Yeah.
And it is, yeah, it is not a gamble that anybody on this planet should have to make. It is not a decision that anybody should have to make. And unfortunately, that's the decision that the IDF and Israelis are currently being faced with, of weighing human life, weighing the lives of Israelis over the lives of Palestinians. And knowing on your side and inside the Gaza Strip, when you were there, that every bomb that gets called off, every time you get told, no, don't enter this location, don't go here, don't go there, there is a terrorist that very possibly could not just kill you or your soldiers, but also Israeli civilians if you don't stop them that day. One of my biggest regrets from Afghanistan had nothing to do with pulling the trigger on anybody. It had to do with missing a terrorist one day that was planting a bomb, like in the road right outside of our camp. And I unfortunately wasn't able to eliminate him. I missed. And it haunts me to this day because less than a couple of weeks later, some of my soldiers got wounded because of that individual.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to put that impression on people to make them understand that those are the decisions that you are quite literally faced with while you're inside there on a daily basis.
Literally. Literally.
Do you have a closing thought that you'd want to leave people with?
Really, the thing that I'd like to, you know, help people understand, you know, people are all have these wonderful desires of like, you know, if we do this and this and this, there'll be peace in the Middle East. If Israel does this, there's lots of great ideas. There's one idea that I want to leave people with, and especially to those who have a Christian background of any kind. If you believe in evangelism and you believe in spreading the gospel to the ends of the earth, then I welcome you to come to the Gaza Strip and to share the gospel in the Gaza Strip. Because the only light that has come out of the Palestinians that I have seen, any actual light and just a story of hope, is Musab Hassan Youssef. He was the son of one of the Hamas founders, living in Ramallah. And this kid, okay, he grew up with this type of mentality and this worldview. I mean, he was where people were thinking up this evil. And he came to an awareness of, this is just pure evil. We're killing those guys and these guys are killing those guys. And then we're all trying to kill the Jews. And this is just horrible. And then he actually had an encounter with a Christian tourist, I think a British lady, you know, that just handed him a tract in Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And that changed his life. He converted Christianity. And ever since then, he has been a beacon of hope in life. I have a lot of good Christian friends living in the Palestinian community. And this is something that people need to understand. I am not anti-Palestinian, but I can tell you from an example of reality, it is the ones who have had a real impact and a real life-changing experience, and that is not bathed in hatred, they're the only ones that can create a future and a hope for their citizens. And it's people like Musab Hassan Youssef. So if you want to bring any change to this region, share the gospel with the Palestinians. Come here. I will help you with that. I will help assist you in any way I can, on any level that I know how, to give you access to whatever, because I'm telling you, realistically, this is the only hope I personally have for the Palestinians. And I know that is a very hard thing to hear. And it's a hard thing for me to say, because I have a lot of good Muslim friends, and it's as if I'm trying to rail on Islam or what have you. That's not what I'm saying. There are many wonderful Muslims who have a respectful Islamic way of their faith and the way they live their lives, mm-hmm. and they're not jihadists. But for these folks, the only Islam they know, it's not even, I don't know if you can even call it Islam, okay?
You can't.
But the world, but wherever they have, it is death. And you having hope, you can bring that hope to these people, and that could create more Musa Hassan Yusufs who bring hope and light and light to this world. And I see that as a way of change and a way of bringing some hope into this very dire situation that the Gazans have.
Yeah. You know, I've said it numerous times on this podcast. I put it out on TikTok and Instagram that true Muslims, like when I was in Iraq or Afghanistan, I had never been treated better, welcomed into homes. I just, it's amazing how real Muslims actually treat the rest of humanity versus the Islamic extremist portion of it. It's a huge difference. And nobody here is saying that we are going to war against Muslims. It's the radical Islamists. It's the extremists. It's the terrorism. And it's the way they go about pushing their ideology and religion and everything else on the world through fear, intimidation, coercion, and control. And it's that is the main difference. Well, sir, I hope I can get you back on again some other time. There's so many things I want to talk to you about and pick your brain on. I wish you and your family the best. I appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you, buddy. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Sir, we really appreciate you coming on the show, and I look forward to having another discussion with you next time where we dive into things just a little bit deeper. Guys, go over to his Instagram account here and give him a follow. He is actually doing some very good things, much like we are doing here on this channel, by combating this ridiculous narrative that somehow Hamas are the good guys. It's nuts. Until next time, peace, love, happiness, and God bless. I'm out of here.